When was the last time you read a book that was so meaningful that when you finished it, you just knew you had to do something concrete to make sure that the world knew about it? Hi, this is Barry Friedman, Truthful Rhino, and I just finished reading such a book, and well, here's my concrete action. The Legacy Letters is a book written by Carew Papritz, and I call this book the book that every parent should write for their children, but few ever will. This book is so important to not only men that are fathers, but every man, because all of us are sons. I tracked down the author, got in touch with MKP, and with all those dots connected, I hope you enjoy some of the gold that awaits you inside the Legacy Letters. So with that introduction, let's welcome Carew Papritz to the Mankind Project Journal. Carew, hello.
Good. How
are
you doing?
Hey, so good, and welcome to meet you. Welcome to the project, and I'm so happy to talk to you. I'll be a little nervous at first, but that's all right. Let me just do a quick intro about how I came into your life. I came across the book, The Legacy Letters, ended up taking it on a hike with me, a five-day hike with a few buddies up to the Enchantments up in Washington, about 3 hours east of Seattle, and laid on a rock and read this book, and I stood up from this rock at the end of 5 hours, and I felt like something huge had changed in my life. Something had shifted. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and why I may have stood up with that reaction?
I can't answer if you were standing up on rocks in the middle of nowhere, but I think, The Legacy Letters is a series, they're private letters, written by a dying father to his children that become their practical, moral, and spiritual guidebook for the rest of their lives. And he'll never live to see them, so this is a very important document for them. And it also becomes this sort of redemptive story of love for his wife because they separate under tragic circumstances. So the children, he actually writes these letters up in this mountain cabin far away where Gloria was brought up when he was 10 years old, called a cow camp.
Mm.
Where they took care of cattle and whatnot with his granddad. And so he was basically going to die here.
Yeah.
And so he wrote these letters, left them behind. His lawyer ends up picking them up, bringing them back. And then 10 years later, their children receive them on their 10th birthday. And that's where the book starts.
Oh, and that is the text on the back of the cover jacket. And when I saw that, I was like, this book's going with me on this trip. And it never let down. First off, congratulations so much on just finding it within yourself to wrestle whatever it took to get that written. It must have been amazing. Was there any personal connection you had to this, or was this something that just came to you as an idea for a book?
Yeah, it was, as I was explaining to someone recently, they had asked me, what had inspired you to write this? And I said, I think we've all gone through that time where it's that wake up in the middle of midnight moment and you go, oh, God, what am I doing with my life?
Mm.
Where am I going with this thing called life, and where do I want to end up? And actually, that moment for me lasted for about 5 years. So that was part of the problem.
Did you go back to sleep at some point, though?
But what was amazing was is I had sort of come back to my roots. My granddad had a small ranch up in in Washington area when I was growing up. It was sort of a farm ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up leaving Hollywood. I got my film degree there and ended up working in Hollywood for a number of years. And I just could not see staying in that speed race any longer. And I started taking this long drive about out throughout the West. And I ended up finding talking to someone at a bar, and they led me on to somebody else, and this, but I ended up at this small ranch in southern Arizona, about as far in the middle of nowhere as one could get.
Wow.
And I started writing this book
on
the back of my pickup.
Oh.
I was literally living out of the pickup, stringing barbed wire fence. I mean, the old fashioned, I can remember this to this day. At the end of the day, soaking in the horse trough for my bath, you know, and that was it. And then getting back on and writing this book, and it was sort of born out of that desolation. It was born out of that solitude.
Mm.
It was born out of that time in my life when I was just saying, you know, you have to you can either go back or you can go forward. But this is the line in one's life that one makes that decision that says, I am going to go forward in a way that's going to completely alter my life, but I will be true to who I am from here, from this point forward.
Wow. Couldn't have been a more targeted message for the listeners of this at this Mankind Project Journal. We have all drawn lines similar to that in the sand, and you've taken yours into a project that I know will touch millions of lives. And every man who's listening to this, everyone who's listening to this, when you hear what Karu just said after you have read the Legacy Letters, your body will be floored with goosebumps as mine just was, just talking about how you wrote it from that cabin and on the back of your pickup truck. I mean, that's the setting for the book, which you set so well. I feel like I could identify the place where Pa wrote all these letters from.
Yeah, and it took that isolation. I mean, it was really something to take oneself out in the prime of my life. I wrote that in my early 30s, and this was, you know, a while back.
Yeah.
But it took years to write it. And that's another question, is that, you know, why did it take so long to write?
Yeah.
And that is, when you're tackling every life subject, when you're trying to explain to yourself, you know, what does it mean to be polite? What does it mean to work? What does it mean to, what does time mean? What is, what are the joys of traveling? What are the joys of, it just goes on and on and on. So it was funny. About a year and a half ago, it suddenly dawned on me that I had become a philosopher. It was the last thing that I'd ever thought I'd become. I mean, we all like to think about things, discuss and whatnot, but by dint of writing this book, I had become a philosopher.
Right.
I was like, whoa, okay, what are you doing with it? Well, let's get the book out.
And interesting to question, has that transferred into your life? Are you some of that character who wrote this book in your life now?
That's actually a great question, because I think the way that I live my life now, relative to the writing of this book, is I am constantly aware of how important it is to stay alive. To stay alive for not only in the moment, but to stay alive to the people around me and to be, you know, to be present. I mean, we use that phrase, you know, sort of flippantly, but boy, when you write a book like this, you better walk your talk. And I think that's part of almost the occupational hazard at times, because in writing this, I'm very, very cognizant of, especially with my son, who's 7 years old, you know, I'm constantly aware that everything I do with him is vital, and I need to listen to him, and he needs to listen to me, and then I need to listen to my wife. And, you know, it's just like, I better love these people like they're the last people on the planet. It's made me much more vital in terms of how I live and love the people that are closest to me in my life.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah.
And you wrote this book. What's the time lapse that the main character has between when he finds out and he dies?
It's about 7 months.
7 months.
Now,
yeah. Okay. I got that feeling writing it, and there's so much in those letters, as you said. Every micro and every macro, it just boom, boom, boom. Everything gets so deep about what we're talking about and what the meaning is. And not only that, I feel like I know those two kids who the author never even met.
Yeah.
Just by the way you tell the stories. And, yes, more congratulations to you on that.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Beautiful pass along.
I should tell you, but too, this is for everyone that's listening. This version of the book, and if you've seen the last lecture, I mean, if you've read the last lecture, or especially Tuesdays with Maury, I created the book, in that size and in that format because most people sort of want their wisdom in an edible size, you know, like an appetizer. And, so what I decided to do, which is, I don't think has ever been done in the publishing industry, is almost like a prequel. And that is, here are 40 of the, as the grown children state in the book, in the flap of the jacket there, they state of the over 200 letters our father wrote to us. We chose 40 for the publication of this particular book.
That, gosh,
So, and so when people read that, they're like, what, 200 letters? Oh, well, that's too much. And then you read these letters in this little book.
Yeah.
And it's not so little. I mean, as you well know, it packs a real punch.
Yeah.
And you get to the end, and like a good movie or a good dinner, and you say, gosh, I wish there was more. And you turn that last page, and it says, hey, is the journey over or has it just begun? No, Legacy Letters Complete is the next book, and it's all 200 letters.
Mm.
So you can go out and have the dinner, and then there's dessert. There's music with the book. So that'll come out next spring. So the book just sort of keeps coming out in one form or another.
So you'll be publishing the book with all 200 letters at some point.
Yeah. And that'll be available on the website, hopefully within the next month or so. It's taken a lot to get. There's just a lot of sort of technical difficulties in the publishing of it. But this one is the one that, you know, and what's nice about this smaller size book here, this edible size book, is that, you know, you can read it and you say, gosh, this is great. This is all I need. Or you can move on to the next one, or really to give it away as a gift, because it's that perfect, you know, hardback gift size. You can just pass it on, and it feels good in your hands. And, you know, I really worked on creating a beautiful, beautiful tactile experience, let alone just the reading inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it is. It's a wonderful gift. I don't know who did the jacket cover, but it just looks exactly like what it should look like for you know, how he talks about it in the book, in the leather binder. And
that's amazing. You know, that is probably one of the greatest compliments you can pay a book cover. It looks like it should look like.
Yes, it looks like exactly like how he described. They were sitting on the table after his death, and the lawyer came to get him, and it's like, oh, that's the leather binder it was in from the book.
Yeah, that's great. I love it.
Yeah, really beautiful. So you have been out talking about this book a little bit. What are some of the surprises that you've had critics or readers tell you they've found in this book that maybe you didn't even know you were putting into it?
This has become the most astounding part of this journey. This, you know, you write this book, and you write it from a very personal place, and you know you're going to bring it out in the world and at some point, but the reaction to it has been nothing short of astounding. People are emailing me and writing me and telling me that this book is changing their lives. And I said, what? What do you mean it's changing their lives? A good example is this bank manager. He called me up the other day and said, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I've read the book 3 times. It's been amazing in my life. He says, I now come home to my wife and kids. I come home earlier from work. We have dinner together. And he said, and this is so funny the way he said it, and this huge benefit, my kids are talking to me now. Like, well, what? They didn't talk to you before? And, you know, it's that sort of, that wake-up call that we're all, you know, it's like, wow, we are living, I guess, too fast. Yeah.
Karu, I called this book. I called my wife when I landed, or when I got back home. We talked about my trip, and I said, I read this book that every single parent in the world should write, and none ever will.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I just it's the book that every parent should write to their kid. Yeah,
no, that was beautiful. That was beautifully written.
Yeah, and I marked so many pages in it that I've since gone through and read with my son. I had my son read the entire chapter to me out loud. He's 11. I had him read the chapter out loud about a boy becoming a man. To hear read that to me, I was in tears, and I will be again now. But just to hear, to hear those words coming from him and see him absorb it in real time as he was reading it.
So when do you become a man, my son? You become a man when you first decide to put away the things of childhood, the talk of childhood and the thoughts of childhood. You decide because you cannot be treated as both a man and a boy, because you are either one or the other, but you are not both. And it doesn't matter your age. You can be a child at 15 or at 40. Only when you as a boy decide you're done waiting for the man you want to be and start being the man you want to become, do you begin to become a man. When do you become a man? When you become your own man. When other men trust you to do a man's work. Trust you with their name, their reputation, their thoughts. Trust you to watch their backs, and trust you with their lives.
I'm just so thankful for them.
I just love that. Really humbling. That really is moving.
Yeah, I pictured that happening when I was reading that section when I was out on the rock alone. I thought, I'm going to have my son read this to me. I want to hear him.
And, my gosh. Now you've inspired me. Now I'm going to have God read it to me. That's nice. Oh, amazing. Yeah. And so, you know, that thing that you're talking about, the parents, you know, this is the book that they should write or the letters they should write. Parents are just, they're coming up to me and they're saying, we need this book. And again, I'm stunned. We need it.
Yeah.
And they're saying, yes, we need to teach our kids how to say thank you and please. We've lost that art. We've lost the art of teaching them what a work ethic means or what it is to be quiet to oneself or to be respectful. And these are just some, you know, these are the pragmatic parts, let alone the spiritual parts that are meant for adults, for everybody. So it really encompasses so many different age groups. It's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for writing it. Hey, so what did you learn about being a father during this journey of writing this book? Why are fathers important? And a note to the listeners, I gave no time to look at these questions. The pauses are from the heart. I know that.
What I learned, I will tell you, this book was completely written out of order, especially the 200 letters.
Mm.
And I had to tie them together to make it seem as if it was over a 7-month period, and it really seemed like it truly happened. And very authentic. And it really comes across that way. And the reviews, you know, they say that too. But what's interesting is one of the last letters I ever wrote for the book was called On My Boy Becoming a Man. And I had notes. A lot of these letters, especially the big ones like on money and on marriage and on love, and I'd have folders of notes and things I would write, you know, things down and expand upon them over the years.
Mm.
And that folder was just full. And I had written parts of that letter over time, but I could never get that emotional bang out of it. I couldn't do it. And then when my son was born, I'm sitting there and he's up on the table in his little crib thing or whatever it is that he's lying on. And I look over at him and all of a sudden, I got it.
Oh.
I said, I'm writing it to you. And it just, that thing snapped and the thing wrote itself. And it was, I mean, that was, you know, it's really sort of secretly one of my favorite letters in the entire, all the 200 letters, because it was so personal. I mean, I was writing it right to the person. And 95% of the book was written before he was born. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, before I forget something, and this is neat, and this will relate to everyone in the Mankind Project. So, one of the things that came out of writing this letter was how to talk to my son about what type of man I want you to be. And I was thinking it's much like a lullaby. You know, you say these very simple things over and over and over to them, and eventually it sort of gets in their brain.
Yeah.
And then this is, you know, it not only do they say it, which is what you were saying about your son reading it, because that's important. After a while, it sinks in, and these boys who become men someday say, you know, this is what my father, this is what my papa said to me, and they repeat it back and they live it. And so what I would say to him at night is this. As I'd say to my son, I say, what are you going to grow up to be? And he says, are you going to grow up to be a good man? He says, I'm going to grow up to be a good man. He said, are you going to grow up to be a fair man? And he would say, yes. Are you going to be an honest man?
Mm.
Yes. He says, are you going to be a courageous man? And he says, I'm going to be a courageous man.
Mm.
And that is what I would say. I've been saying it to him for years now.
Mm.
And a funny thing happened at his school. This is sort of the funny benefit of this. So he's in class, and the teachers ask him, you know, or not ask him, but ask all the kids, what do you want to grow up to be? You know, I want to be a video game engineer. I want to play video games and all this stuff.
Right.
I want to be a nurse. Okay, a doctor, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And, good, well, what do you want to be? And he goes, I want to be a fair man. And the teacher said, you want to be a fair man? You want to be a clown at a fair? And he goes, no, I want to be a fair man. She had no clue what he meant. And I had to explain to her that she got it.
Yeah.
Because do we say these words anymore?
No, that's not part of the box we're given, man.
No, that's perfectly put. Yeah.
That's not part of the operating system. And it's the basis for the operating system that you can be any of those jobs those kids were yelling out and come into it from being a fair man. And
but to be a good man. Yeah. I mean, when I look at what your listeners are trying to achieve,
yeah.
And I was trying to think, how do you reduce this in this letter to this one idea? And it's like, wow, to be a good man is a great, great thing. And it is hard to be a good man. And it takes work to be a good man.
It does.
And when you do that and you're that, if someone says, man, that is a stand-up guy, that's a good guy, then people say, yeah, you're right. That's someone I want to be around.
Mm-hmm. And then the job, whatever the kids were yelling out, that becomes second or third importance.
Right. All of it is, right?
All of it is.
All of it is secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
To being that one thing. And so I cannot wait. If there was one thing that anybody gets out of this book, guys, go to that letter, read that letter.
Mm.
That would make my day, because the majority of book buyers are women, and for me to reach my fellow men would really, that would be the treat of all treats.
I love it. I hope men will look into this book and find the gifts in it. As someone who's doing a lot of men's work, this book knocked me flat onto a rock, and I refused to get up until I got to the last page, and then I was bummed, and then I turned that page and said, oh, there's more of these letters. That'll be a real treat to bring into my life at some point. Hey, so I have to ask you, and some of you, maybe you've done this too, but rarely get to speak to an author of a book I like, I'll tell you that, and I can say, hey, if I read the other 200 letters, can I find out the burning question on my mind? Why did these two separate?
And
why did they?
Oh my God, the plot spoiler. No, there's no plot to spoil. That was interesting in the sort of the technical writing of this scenario.
Yeah, I bet.
And one part is that for the reader, they find out everything up front. So this is not a plot. There's virtually no plot to this book.
Mm, right.
It's the letters themselves. So you're not worried. You're not going, well, what's going to happen? Well, what happens when we get to the end? And then you just enjoy the letters for what they are, because you realize one of the interesting things that a number of people have told me is that they know more about where the author is going in the book than the author does, because when you start reading the book, he's just starting to read the letters. Mm-hmm. You already know what's happened to him.
Interesting.
Really wild sort of Mobius strip twist of narrative to read the book, and then you carry this knowledge that you know this man's going to die. He knows he's going to die too. But it's, you're carrying that as you're reading through this and you're watching him evolve.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, did you get that sense when you were reading even those 40 letters?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I didn't think of it the way you're putting it, that I knew something he didn't know. But yeah, that's a whole nother level on top of my experience with this book right now, just to think about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he was writing those, he didn't know where it was all going and what the outcome was. And yeah. The letter at the beginning, from the attorney, it sets the stage very well. And the author didn't know that whole thing when he was writing them.
No, and it's always in his voice. And what's nice, I think the listener should also know, is that it goes from summer to fall to winter. So there's a progression. And in the big book, it really falls. You're going into day into night, and he's wrestling with things, and he comes back, and then he's in the day, he's out walking, or he's out doing stuff, or fishing, or getting drunk at night. I mean, he's all over the book, because he's wrestling with the fundamental forces of what it means to pass on this thing called life to these children he'll never live to see.
Yeah, and let's, every man listening to this, let's put ourselves in the place of of dealing, working, wrestling with that, the shadows and the drivers that come into knowing wife is pregnant and you're going to be, the ex-wife is pregnant and you're going to be passed away before two children are born. Twins, which I just thought was another beautiful touch to have a boy and a girl twin. Oh my gosh, was that a nice touch?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. You know, there's another point I wanted to bring up that I thought was an important was one of the astonishing things that are happening with this is how people are reacting is I've had to sort of conceive which is called living a legacy life.
Mm.
And that is, so legacy isn't what you leave behind. It's how you live now. Mm. And so I thought that was sort of how the formula, or not the formula, but this idea that came about, and how do you create this legacy life? Well, you create it through these series of legacy moments. Okay, what's a legacy moment? A legacy moment is something that sort of contains meaning and purpose and happiness. So, for example, for me, the other day I'm sitting here working away. I've got all this stuff going on with the book, and I'm getting it out left and right, and there's this big thunderstorm coming down. It's raining outside, cats and dogs, and I love the rain. Mm. I mean, I really do. I'm sitting here going, whoa, slow down. What are you doing? There's a thunderstorm. Get your tuchus outside and go listen to this. And so I grabbed a big old steaming cup of hot coffee, and I got outside underneath the patio awning, and whether it's got a tin roof on it, and I sat down, and for 15, 20 minutes, I just absorbed. I was there.
Yeah.
You know, the old-fashioned smell of the roses along the way. And
yeah.
And, but it's other things that people are relating, sort of, you know, hey, I'm going to smile at 10 people on the sidewalk today. Or I'm going to, I'm going to call up somebody I haven't talked to in years. Or I'm going to, you know, you just create these, or I'm going to create a, you make a bigger decision. I'm going to create a legacy family. Well, what does that mean? That means I'm going to communicate to my family individually. I'm going to take my kids out one by one, every one of them every week, and we're going to do something special, even if it's for half an hour. And the special means walking down the street and looking and saying, hey, what's in the trees? What's this? And we just go have a walk and a talk. I mean, something that, and we're losing that ability to slow down and say, hey, you are precious, or this time is precious. We need to carve it out because time is the ultimate gift we have to give to people, and it's the ultimate gift we have to give to ourselves.
Mm, so well said. And Karu, I want to thank you on behalf of, well, let me just scope it out here, on behalf of 7 billion people in the world, and for the sake of this interview, 50,000 men around the world, 50,000 plus men who have done the Mankind Project. Thank you for wrestling whatever it took to put this project, to bring it, to manifest it into the world. It is a gift. There's no doubt about it. And I highly recommend everyone who's listening to this pick up at least one copy of this to enjoy, and maybe a few others for a man, a woman, a parent who could benefit from reading the Legacy Letters. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, Barry. It's been an honor and a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.